Hello, world, and welcome to the Off Track Podcast. I am your host, Matt Eschen. It is great to have you here. Thank you for pulling a chair up to the table. We could not be more excited to have you joining us. As always, we've got a whole panel. Everybody's here, but this week, everybody's not here. We've got a couple. Scott's got a guy lady at the NCAA Championships and the heptathlon. Tom's got some team meetings. Scott's putting on some meets. Herb's got stuff going on. So we have everything going on for the group. So this week, again, Darren and I hold down the fort. We have the absolute honor of welcoming Olympic gold medalist and the still current 200-meter indoor high school national record holder at 22.97, did it at the Ziploc Games at a wood track. Miss Bianca Knight is joining us. We are extremely excited to have her. This conversation, oh man, had us really going. There's some really good stuff here. We talk about Bianca's decision to go to UT, the University of Texas, why she decided to leave after her freshman indoor season. We also talk about the challenges facing professional athletes, especially the role that social media is putting on, the athlete themselves, from the perspective they're trying to, the image they're trying to portray. But we also talk about the BK Knight Foundation. We talk about the BK Track Stars app and the importance of what Bianca is doing with youth and giving back to the youth, especially in her home state of Mississippi. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Off Track Podcast. It is great to have you joining us again here. Thank you for pulling a chair up to the table. We're going to flip the script as we have last couple of weeks. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with changing things up. But we're going to dive right into it tonight. We have an incredible guest, an Olympic gold medalist with us, one of the fastest, actually. I think she might still hold the indoor records for at least collegiate. I got to double check that up in high school in the 200s themselves. And Bianca's going to tell me if I was right or wrong on that stuff. But we have Bianca Knight joining us here on the podcast. Bianca, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Absolutely wonderful. Did I get that right or might I get that wrong? I don't know the 200 meter records off my head, so I might be wrong.
I had it. I still hold a facility record in Arkansas, but Gabrielle Thomas broke the national record, I think, 2 years ago. Okay. Maybe years ago. So I had it for 10 right. years, and then she broke it. And I do still hold the high school national record at 22.97 indoors.
Okay. Now, where'd you do that 22.97?
In Ziploc, in Pocatello, Idaho.
Am I right or wrong? I heard rumors that there's an indoor track in Jackson, but talking to my friends down there, there's no indoor track in Jackson unless somebody built a board track.
So crazy that people don't remember that. It seems that me and Cora McGee are the only two people who remember vividly running at the Magnolia Classic every single year. That's when we first met. Okay. And of course, Corey McGee, awesome athlete, distance runner from Mississippi, from Past Christian. So we've known each other since high school. We met, I think, when she was a sixth grader, and that is where we met. And of course, from there, we traveled. I watched her break the national high school record as an eighth grader indoors in a mile in New York. Like, we literally traveled together, like separately, but together. We were the only two people there representing our state. And we started in Mississippi in the Coliseum on a wooden bank track because everybody was so surprised when I went to Ziploc. And I didn't have a problem running on the wooden track. And I told them, I said, well, I've always ran on the wooden track because that's what we had in Mississippi in the Coliseum. So unfortunately, a lot of people don't remember that. And it wasn't that long ago because clearly I'm not that old.
No, you're not.
A lot of people don't remember it. But yes, we used to have it. I don't know why they stopped. I'm actually working to try to get that back going. But nobody even remembers. But we had it. It's not a rumor.
I think being down here in Alabama, the one thing I've always talked about is there used to be an indoor, like up in, I want to say it was Huntsville. It might have been down in Montgomery, but I think it was Huntsville that they had the 200-meter bank track, or 200-meter track, but it was a wood track. So the same type of thing. I bet you the same people doing that stuff in Mississippi are doing the same thing in Alabama. But that stuff was, man, that's amazing. And then it's a simple, that was an incredible experience up there. How was that? Did you have fun with that?
I did. The travel was always terrible. My very first year, my luggage was lost. So a coach from Colorado bought some shoes for me and gave me a uniform and things. And they kind of, you know, helped me fill it out. It was my first year there. So I ended up getting the slow heat for both of my races, but I won out of the slow heat. So the first day you can only wear sneakers because it's a wooden track. And it's like to preserve the track. So the finals are the only races running spikes. Mm-hmm. So that was my first time running in flats. And I didn't expect that. So, like I said, it was an experience, but I went there 3 years in a row, I think. And I always ran well. The competition was always really, really good. And of course, I ended up setting I set the junior record in the 60 and then the high school national record in the 200, but I lowered the 60 in Houston, but I set it initially in Idaho.
Now, did you do that in tennis shoes or spikes?
Good question.
I just had to know.
There's no doubt about that. I always remember looking back at high school, looking at it, like, man, the Simplot Games, that'd be so cool to be able to go out there and run. We weren't going out there in Wisconsin. Like, we're going to sit back. We had some 200 meter flat springboard tight bank tracks, like some incredible ones. You're going to get that 10-12 second conversion on the mile because it's so tight and so small. But yeah, we're never going to go out there. So that was awesome. But so, as you said, and you referenced you and Corey McGee, you're a Mississippi girl, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Mississippi girl, Gatorade National Athlete of the Year, indoor record holder. You have the accolades. You have everything going on. And Texas calls. And you head to Texas, okay? Why do you choose the University of Texas? And for some people who don't know, like myself, where else were you considering?
My first choice was actually University of Southern California. I really, really like Coach Fernandez and Coach Alice were the coaches there at the time. And I like the program. I love the visit. It was my best visit, but it was really far. I didn't think I would be successful, not even knowing when my family would be able to come see me or if I would be able to go home and things like that. So I kind of factored that into why I didn't want to go there. Texas was the next best school. I visited LSU. I considered South Carolina, Tennessee, pretty much all of your big schools. I considered them all. And Texas at the time, believe it or not, I went there for the team atmosphere, but I also liked that a lot of the other girls coming out of my class wanted to go other places. I grew up in a track club with a very small number. So I was used to the individual attention. I was used to one-on-one pretty much with coaches. Yep. So I figured if I went to college with a big class of girls, then I may not have gotten it. And I was the only person to sign with Texas that year. Everybody else went to other schools. I think Texas A&M probably got about 30 people that year. And then Tennessee got a few, and LSU and South Carolina got a lot that year, in class of 2007. So, yeah, I was the only person to sign from the 2007 class for spring with the University of Texas.
Now, you mentioned something with hands-on coaching and that stuff, and it's something everybody, I think, preach. Darren and I are very big with that hands-on coaching and being individualistic in what we do. You said small class in youth. Are we talking 3? Are we talking 5, 20? How many kids were in that youth area with you?
I think the largest number on our track club probably reached maybe 12 to 15. And okay. I started when I was 11. Mm-hmm. So it went from 3 of us to 12 to 15. Then probably my last 3 years, it probably was just me.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So I'm curious, what sold you on Texas in the recruiting process? Because I always think this is interesting because we have, you know, people, high school, we have high school coaches listening. And what was it for you at Texas that kind of, I guess maybe it was the tipping point. Was it the coaching? Was it the atmosphere of the university, the area, the culture, the tradition? Well, I mean, it could be a combination of all those things, but I'm curious for you, what pulled you there?
It was the culture first. First, of course, 2005, the football team won the Rose Bowl. 2004, Sanya, I think, did she represent the Olympics as a freshman from Texas that year? I want to say she did really, really well that year as a freshman at Texas. And then she turned professional the year after that. Marsha Vett. Like, they had such a great class of women to come through there. So it really was like a winning culture. And that year, not even that year, my few years coming out of high school, the top schools at the time were University of South Carolina, University of Texas, and LSU. Those were the three big schools. It always came down to the 4x4. It was always a fight. And I just loved watching those schools. So like as I went through high school, I always, you know, just kept those schools in mind. And of course, it just coincided with the national championship in 2005 for their football team. And they just looked like they had a rich, winning environment. I went there. The school is beautiful. It's huge. It's so many people. Everybody will tell you about Texas Relays and Sixth Street and everything. And I had gone to Texas Relays as a high schooler, I think, about 3 years straight. And I'm not sure why, and I'm glad I'm able to say this, but if you go and you look at the Texas Relays my senior year, it has that I set the stadium record, but somehow the school has not given it to me. So I was very happy about that because the record was like 20 or 30 years old because it's always so windy at yes. Texas Relays. So that's why it's hard to break the record because it's hard to run a legally fast time there. And in my preliminary race, I caught a great win and I broke the stadium record there. So that kind of sold me on it as well, to do something like that on that track. And then to think like, oh my goodness, I'm going to come here next year.
This is amazing. Love the track. It makes yeah. me feel good. I can run fast on this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So was it a legal wind?
I think it was like a 1.6.
How's a legal wind? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it has an S by it. Like every year is always so confusing that they never changed it. So, well, whatever it is, what it is. I mean, I kind of got the receipts, but
I love it.
I love Texas. It was just amazing. And it was driving distance from home. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to worry about when I was going to see my family. The coach, mm-hmm. obviously, like I said, she was the most winningest coach in the NCAA. She was the first female, I'm not first sure. I can't remember who was like the first black female to win a national championship, but she was definitely the first female to win a national championship mm-hmm. track and field. So it was just the history, the culture, the distance from home, the individuality. Yep. Nobody else came in with me, so I knew I was going to have that freshman, the baby. I'm the baby now, and everybody's going to take care of me. So
you weren't going to be overlooked. You were going to immediately be someone who's making an impact. You're going to be someone who's valued. And I think that's always important when recruits are looking at schools. You know, am I going to be valued in this spot? Or am I just going to be another, you know, am I just going to be another number? You know, you don't want to be that. You want to be prioritized and individualized. So, good insight right there.
I like that. So, okay, I got to ask the question, of course. Then you go and you leave after the indoor track season. Obvious question. Why? I mean, you turn pro after that stuff. Why do we turn pro right away after indoors? Was it you know what, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, which no disrespect to Texas, of course, but was it what I thought it was going to be? Or because you do talk, the one thing you do talk about, I see your head shaking a little bit, is I wanted the individual attention. I knew I was going to get it at Texas, but the problem is Texas is it's its own country. So the individualizing that is a little bit harder to come by. And I was like, that's interesting to find out. So are you willing to talk about that?
It was more competitive than I thought it would be. Okay. Coming to a team and being on a team, and like I said, I came from summer track where I never really had a team. So I was excited about that part. And it wasn't bad. It was still very competitive. And I was looked at as a competitor and not a teammate. So practice was not as smooth as I thought. The transition to, you know, making friends and doing all the fun things that you think you're going to do when you get there wasn't that. And I have always been one of those athletes. I had the luxury of having coaches who allowed me to have my opinion or ask questions. And the coach at the time did not like that you ask questions. It was kind of like, you know, if I say do this, then just do this. Don't worry about it. And I was never asking in an undermining way. It was more so I'm used to of my coach telling me, hey, BK, this is what we have today. And, you know, the purpose behind this workout is X, Y, and Z. And it gave me a better idea of what to look for when I'm doing it. Not so much as explaining like, hey, I just want to make sure you want to do this. It wasn't like that. It was more so that I know what I'm supposed to feel. I know what it's supposed to look like and things like that. And yep. Since we weren't familiar with one another, it was more seen as questioning the coaching, and it wasn't that. So I think just clashing over that and arguing, honestly, because it turned into an argument at one point to, you know, I wanted to transfer. I would have rather been at another school at that point. And the option just presented itself after I ran the time that I ran to look at another option, which is to be a professional athlete. And that's really honestly how that ended up happening. It was never my intent going into it. I was unhappy. I wanted to leave. And that just was another option that presented itself that wouldn't cause eligibility problems and yep. when I could run and if I could qualify for this and the red shirts. Like, so it really wouldn't, the transfer would have been a little bit difficult at the time I wanted to leave. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. I just had another option present itself while I was going through like a tough time and I took it.
Did you have it? Okay, I got to ask a question. Being a national record holder, Gatorade Athlete of the Year, as we mentioned earlier, as we started the podcast, did you have that option in coming into Texas? Did you have something on the table or was there nothing? It was like, look, I got scholarship offers to five big schools and I can take those or there's other pro thing.
Yeah, no one ever approached me. And I think people always think I'm like making that up when you see mm-hmm. high school kids now going, turning professional 10th and 11th grade.
Games changed.
Yeah, I think, you know, at the time when I was coming up, Allison was the only person who had ever done that. That was not a normal thing. And that wasn't something that high school kids sought to do. Mm-hmm. So, no, nobody really approached me about that. It really happened once I got to college and my transition was going well. And I wanted to leave. It was kind of like, well, you know, just wait to nationals and see what you do. Cause you know, you just never know. Like just wait.
I mean, that's, I can believe it, especially back then and growing up just a little bit before you and that kind of stuff where nobody went. I mean, whether it didn't matter the best one, even the world, even the Alan Webb, who had the opportunities, right. that was the big, big name right there. He even went to Michigan for a year and that's enough. This isn't for me. And we did the same thing. Like, I'm going to go back to what I know, back to familiarity. The thing was, he ran well under Warhurst in Michigan. He did real well. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there wasn't that big opportunity to be able to do it. And I think groups are starting to put more money, It's still stupid slow, the men's and women's side, where they're starting to put money into pro track and field groups. But okay. It's still barely getting going, no matter what you guys are doing. You've had the experience with that kind of stuff. So that you transfer out. Remind me where you went down, you started training and doing that stuff. And then, cause then you had a very, very successful pro career as well. So where did you head after that?
I actually just went back with my, summer track coach.
Oh geez.
So okay. I had the luxury. I only had another coach, which was a college for a little while. Mm-hmm. And then, I went back to training with Darryl Woodson, who was my same coach, in high school. Yep. So, that's why a lot of people's like, how did you like the transition that you left, but you know, ended up being successful still. Like you didn't have like a down, you know, year or anything like that. And I was like, well, because I went back to the same coach. Like I didn't, my bio was familiar with him and, mm-hmm. Hey, I mean, it just ended up working out. So,
I mean, that's an easy transition to be able to have that stuff. You've had a lot of different competitions, gold medals, that kind of stuff. I mean, all over. I could go through them, but I don't think I have time to go through all that kind of stuff. What was a couple of the memorable races that you had over years? I mean, it was anything small from the indoor championship? Was that one of the best ones, or was it even the gold medal that you won? What was a couple of those things?
Man, you know, my track IQ as a high schooler was very low, meaning that I didn't know what records were, you know, I didn't know who held what record. Mm-hmm. I didn't know a lot about the sport to be excited about this or to be excited about that. So whenever I did something significant, I can say now the things that I did that was significant, but when I did it at the time, it didn't really seem like much. Yeah. So, I mean, looking back, it seems like the 22-97, which that record I set in 2007, that's still there, not realizing how difficult that is going to be for somebody to break, and how much I broke it by. Yeah. I think it was 23-14 was the national high school record before I ran that time. And and it's just like, man, I like shattered it with 22-97. But you know, the sad part about track and field is a lot of people don't get excited enough about the stuff that you do for you to be excited about it. So nobody really made a big deal about it. So I didn't know that it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely a very, very, very memorable thing, along with winning the Gatorade Athlete of the Year. I didn't even know anything about the ESPYs. I didn't watch that type of stuff. So when Gatorade came to Mississippi and surprised me with it, I was just like, what is this? Like, what is going on? Because every year I was always Mississippi Gatorade Athlete, Track and Field Athlete of the Year. And I didn't know it went beyond that. Yep. I didn't know there was like a national one. Yep. So when they did that, I'm like, what? And I was like, you're going to California? I'm like, for what?
For
like,
what?
Like, what am I going to California for? So it's sad. I really wish I would have got to experience the things in the way that I feel like I would have now, knowing how significant that stuff was. But I didn't know. I was just running and having fun. And I kind of felt like what I was doing was the same thing everybody else was doing, because I came up in the 07, 6, 5, and 4. So you have your Sanya's, Allison's, Jessica Beers, you have your Francina McCory. Like, you had so many people running so fast and breaking American records and doing all this stuff that I did not see the significance in what I was doing until I became an adult and I looked back and I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. Like, that's some amazing stuff. But
I wrote 23 in yours. Like, that's pretty, that's moving a little bit. You may have actually busted the track when you actually did that. Yeah. You just wore sneakers and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
Bianca, I have a question for you. So as you were making the transition from high school to college, college to professional, what are some of the challenges that you faced as far as, okay, now I've got to take it to the next level? I mean, what it could be in your training, in your attitude, in your mental approach. What are some of the things that you really had to work on?
People's opinions. I have never, ever been the type of person who liked criticism from strangers. And I mean negative criticism, not the kind that's supposed to help you.
Not constructive.
Yes. So, of course, if anybody's ever seen me before, you know, I've never been a small girl. I have always been on the thicker side of a sprinter. And I think the most, since I was probably an eighth grader, mm-hmm. I have always heard I was really fat and I was so overweight and I was not going to be worth anything and I was not going to be good. And I took it when I was younger just because I was a kid and I really didn't pay much attention to it. But when I made the transition from college to a professional athlete, now you're getting paid. It's your job now. So now people feel like it's their job to tell you about your nutrition. It's their job to tell you what your body's supposed to look like. They take all of the natural ability that got you there and start breaking everything down. Oh, your form is terrible and you are too big and you're supposed to look like this and you're supposed to look like that. And then people don't even know, like, I ended up developing an eating disorder because I felt like, okay, like, so what am I not supposed to eat? Like, I'm like, I don't understand what it is that I'm supposed to do here. Because when I look back, I actually was pretty small. Like, I look, and I'm like, what in the world? Like, I believed it though. I believed it because they would compare me to athletes who had nowhere near the same body type as me. And I didn't realize that at the time. It's like, I've never been that skinny. Like, you want me to be 120 pounds. Like, I haven't been 120 pounds since I was in sixth or seventh grade like this. And I'm very muscular too. So even though I didn't look ripped up, I pick up muscle fast, and obviously muscle is heavier than fat. So the scale is never going to reflect my fitness. So that was really hard. It was really hard. And being a woman is even harder because They try to control pretty much everything, what you eat, whether or not you get on birth control, if you are on birth control, what kind, because that makes you fat. And it's just, mm-hmm. you go through so much stuff to the point where it's just like, I walked away from the sport because it's like, I'm not interested in that much, interested in it that much to take this much criticism when I'm doing well. It's like, I'm not even doing bad. My first couple of years, I think I was winning the Golden League. It was a Golden League before I came out. My transition, like you said, was really well. I went straight to Jamaica. Yeah. I won my very first 200 race and everybody was like, oh my God, do you know what you just did? Because I think mm-hmm. at the time, Veronica Campbell had never lost the Jamaica Invitational. She was coming off of, she was getting ready for the Olympics. It was Beijing. So and like, you just took down like, oh my gosh, like this is amazing what you just did. You know, just making a crazy thing about. So I did really, really good. I was winning. I was winning the Diamond League 1 year. I was always doing well. Was I the fastest person on the track all the time? No. But I was doing really, really well. Every race, I was consistent and I would get off the track still. And somebody is talking about how I looked in my uniform, or somebody is I just could never get, I never understood that. So, you know, I was the type, I'm on the internet arguing with people. And that's when Track Shark was around. So Track Shark was a huge platform. Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It was like a 23 page forum talking about, hey, she's getting too much money. She doesn't even look like she's supposed to have that much money. Just literally just because of my body type. And I'm just like, what is this? Like, what? I don't understand this. So, I mean, I'm better now, but that was difficult as a 19, 20 year old to continue to see that every day. And you're doing well.
Yeah. So, I mean, and so, Darren, I got something real quick. So okay. one thing we had talked about before last week, and again, you, it's not like you went to your first race in Jamaica and went DFL or got DQ'd or didn't finish or pulled something or did something. I mean, you took down Veronica Campbell nicely. I mean, stand up on the mountaintop. That's a damn good thing to do right there. But one thing we had talked about a couple of weeks ago, Natasha Rogers, former NCAA champion in the 10K, she had talked about this a little bit, having that eating disorder and having those issues that she had going on, because there's so much outside pressure. Where she told the story where she was sitting in the bathroom or something like that, a day or two after winning the national title in the 10K, and she went from having 50 followers on Twitter to 10,000, and she's like, holy crap. And it was amazing, but she was blown away by it. And then she got rid of a lot of social media, which is a very smart thing to do. But then she said the one thing that brought her back, and I want you to talk about this a little bit, if you could, was her support system. She talked about how absolutely important it was to have a good support system around you, because nobody wants your athlete to go down that road. Nobody wants to go down that with anything in general, and nobody should have to, because as you said, we've had distance runners that are skinny as rails, and that's how they are. And we've had distance runners who are supposed to be a little bit bigger. I mean, myself as a distance runner, I was quote unquote this is something weird to say, but the fat kid amongst my teammates at Iowa, because they were 120 pounds and 6'1", and I was 155 pounds, 150 pounds at 6'3". Okay, so I got 30 pounds on you. I look bigger, but I'm not. And the same thing with you. Like, you were built. That's how people are. People are built differently. Selinsky even said it a couple of weeks ago on his too. He's like, I was just a built guy. I was used to doing that stuff. But the one thing a lot of people had, I got sidetracked there for a second, I apologize, is this support system. So how important was that coming back to it? Can you talk about that?
It was important, but you know what? When you are the first person going through what you're going through, like there was no one else in my family who became a professional athlete at all. Mm-hmm. So it was new territory for all of us. So the initial reaction from the people around me was to believe what everyone was saying. It's like, you know, saying, well, maybe, you know, you could clean your form up a little bit. Well, my coach never did this, but just like the people around me, but you know, they were like, you know, you need to, maybe you do need to get on a diet. Maybe you do need to do this. Maybe you just like, you know, if everybody's saying it, then, you know, maybe it's true. Maybe it's true, until it got to a point where I started cutting people out. Then I think people left me alone. But because it's just, I'm not the first. I won't be the last. All we can do is kind of share our stories and tell people, you know, don't listen to that stuff. Everybody's built different and we don't all look alike. Yep. So, you know, if it's working for you, it's working for you, and kind of let it be at that. Because, I watched Mary Kane's story and it's just like, oh my goodness.
That was incredible.
ridiculous, but it's the truth. Like, that is exactly what happens to women. Like, I don't know how it is for men, but our bodies get ripped apart, and a lot of it is just genetics. Like, we're you get us when we're like young women, and we're turning into like grown women. So the body is going to change. It's not going to stay the same. And it's just like, they kind of want us to suppress that. It's like, how are we supposed to do that? Like, I don't understand.
You got to deal with the body how it is. And you've got to fight the, you know, live with the body, make the best of what it has, and eventually get it back to it. You're right. I don't know how it is that way. Darren, go ahead. I know you had a question.
Yeah. So my question was for our young ladies out there that are, you know, coming up in sports. Of course, I have a young daughter that's a gymnast, and, you know, she's going to be going through some of the same issues, I'm sure. What's some advice that you have, knowing what you know now?
Like you said, having a great support system. A great support system is going to make all of the difference. And also, if you're doing well, you're competing well, you feel good, you're not having any injuries, like, it doesn't actually, what they're saying is not actually what's happening. It's like, you're telling me that I won't be this, or I'm not going to be this, or I'm not going to be that, but I'm literally doing all of those things. I just PR'd last week. I'm in the best, I feel the best I've ever felt. I look the best I've ever feel like I look. So it's kind of like, do your own self checks. If you are all of a sudden falling off and you getting last place and I don't know, your clothes don't fit, okay, maybe. But if that's not the case, it's probably not true. Like, I mean, I guess you have to have that balance. Everybody's not going to like you. Everybody's not going to be your fan. Everybody's not going to give you great advice. Everybody's not going to be rooting for you. There are some people that were specifically saying, like, they were put here to balance the scale. Like, okay, everybody tells she's doing good. Let's come in and throw some bad stuff in there. Let's balance this thing out so they don't get too high. I don't know. I guess they try to keep people humble or something. I don't know. But I just say, don't listen. It's hard. It really is hard. So I think social media, now I'm so happy that we didn't really have a lot of that when I first started.
Oh my goodness, but, yes. Oh my goodness.
I wouldn't have made it probably by a year or two with that. But take in as the least amount of that as possible, because they're going to leave negative comments under the pictures. They're going to post your picture and put think pieces around it about what they think. And these people have never did any of the things or accomplished any of the things you've accomplished. So I think when you put things into perspective, if you're doing well, you feel fine. Your coach is not complaining. And some coaches are bad coaches. So if your coach is complaining and your parents is kind of like, I don't think this coach knows what they're talking about, you know, maybe kind of, I don't know, maybe change coaches. But always know yourself. When you know yourself, you're the athlete, you know yourself better than anyone. So if you don't feel like it's true what they're saying, then just don't let it bother you.
That's the thing. If you know, I 100% agree right there. I won't even attempt to be the level you've been at before, but I've been at the national championships, running that kind of stuff. And you know when your body feels good. You know when that thing's we're going to roll. You know when you're like, ah, yes, let's go. It's time to light the fire in the track because it is going to go. You just have that sense. And nobody has to tell you. Again, if your coach is telling you, hey, something's going on, like, go back and do a little searching. But if it's again and again, and you're like, no, I'm fine, have that conversation, communicate with the coach and say, hey, I don't think it's up. And especially mom and dad are like, you're fine. Be like, then let's go. Let's drop it and go.
You know, your times at practice and like you feel amazing. Everything is good. And then you get off your track for the race, great race. And we gotta go on a diet. Like what? Like,
yeah, I just dropped it. I just dropped a pretty fast time. But what diet are you? No, not at all. Yeah. You're right. When I started out running it, we had Diestat had just started, which is back. I mean, Diestat, for anybody that's listening, it remembers Diestat. I know you do, Bianca. Yeah. But that was back then. That's when everything started. That's when Run was not around. Track Strike was not around. And that's when it started out. I remember being in high school, getting a little bit of battles back and forth on the message boards, just like you talked about, going, what the hell am I actually doing? Why am I on these things? Just let it go. And the minute you did, and you may get rid of that stuff, all the stress is gone because you go out and perform. And it was always the best thing. And you're right, man, I would hate to have the social media. Some kids, I got to give props to a few of the kids nowadays that are doing it right, that are actually like, hey, here's my workout, tagging coaches, getting us to notice them. Like, that awesome, awesome job. And it's 100% real. We as college coaches, I'll tell you this right now, we love to see that. We don't want to see anything else. But the minute things start getting changed and everything, dude, put the fact you had a bad day on there. Nobody wants to put the fact they had a bad day on there. It's like, I mean, I think we talked about last week, but that was such a good thing when Abba Coburn a couple of weeks ago had a bad 5K. And I think she put it on there. She's like, that was a bad day. That was a bad day. But it was so transparent that I was like, you got to love that, because she's going from the days that are perfect and she's in, you know, everywhere else in Cabo drinking margaritas, whatever she's doing. And then all of a sudden the bad day on the track and you're like, yes, that is a real human being. It's not the whole, we ran a, you know, world record in 4x1 today. And then the next month has been bad. This was bad today. I'm going to go relax, get back into it, and off we go. So one thing we've got you on here for, of course, is your foundation and your app that you have going. And I want to talk about that. But the same thing, I want to actually get into two things. One, you mentioned it briefly. You had a small youth track and field team itself. Okay. And one thing we didn't ask about, and at the time I didn't want to, was how did you get into youth track and field? Mom and dad said, hey, this will keep you out of trouble, go in there? Or was it like, oh, hey, I had some people around me that were running fast. You know what? I'm gonna get pulled into this, into the coach. How did you get into youth track and field?
The Magnolia Classic.
Magnolia Classic.
We were there running, and there was a summer track coach there. I didn't know that at the time, but yeah. He saw me run the 4x2, and mm-hmm. He found my mom. He found her and asked if I'd ever run track before. And yeah. She said, no, she always comes here just for, like, it was like an all-comers fun mm-hmm. thing that our track team did. So, because I came from a big, big track school. So mm-hmm. Even in the sixth and seventh grade, they were taking us to the all-comers meet. So after that, he said, please bring her out this summer to try out for the summer track team, because I think that she has something special. And that same year, I made it to the Junior Olympics, and I came back with like 2 second places and a third. My mm-hmm. very first time actually competing was in Sacramento, California, I think in 2001.
Okay.
And from there, it was pretty much history. I competed in track and field every year after that in the summer. I started running varsity in the seventh grade. So,
but you could do that in Mississippi.
It kind of took off. Like, once I ran at that indoor meet, mm-hmm. and people kind of saw, like, oh my goodness, then it was like a done deal after that.
So the youth coach itself had a lot of influence on you on mm-hmm. what to do. Talk a little bit about the influence that the coach had on you.
My very first coach was Edmund Donald. He okay. had a very, very successful track and field program at Jackson State University. So his specialty to me was distance. He always churned out the best 800 mm-hmm. meter runners. So of course, initially the first thing he did was put me in the 400. He saw that I was a sprinter, but he loved the 4 and the 8. So I trained like a 800 meter runner. Really, I did a lot of 5s and 6s, and I did very few sprint work. My first years, I did the 2 and the 4, and I dropped down to the 1 later on. Okay. But we we had fun. It was never really serious. He never, and every time I look back, he really did just let me run and have fun. But of course, like I said, his program was getting really successful with Jackson State. And he was a college coach. So yep. His time for me started to kind of get scarce, because it's like, you know, we're going to national championships and stuff and everything. So then I was introduced to Daryl Woodson, which I call him D2, because I had two coach D's. So D2 and I started when I was 15. And of course, he ended up being my coach as a professional athlete as well, because he was a volunteer at Jackson State at the time. And both of them, they were pretty much just alike. They treated me, they were fun, but more like father figures. They never yelled at me. They never cussed at me, never screamed at me, never hassled me about not hitting the time. Half the time, I didn't even know what time I was supposed to hit. Like, we never, that practice wasn't like that. It was fun. And they just let me develop on my own. And they made me just love the sport. So honestly, that's pretty much all it was. They found me, they saw me and saw that I had something special. And we just trained and ran pretty much all over the U.S. And then I made Morocco team. So yeah, world teams, mm-hmm. all of it. So it was pretty easy. I had a pretty, very, very easy youth career. Mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing. And you were like, hey, I've been pretty honest. I did have an easy youth career. I didn't have these options, but I still just... It more sounds like one of the things, and we always say this, and as we get freshmen in, or even freshmen in high school, we'd say that to kids who have no idea what the hell is going on, they're like, the being naive in the sport is the greatest thing you can do, because once you do start listening to the social media posts, once you do start listening to somebody who's telling you, you know, you need to do this and change your form here and do that stuff, then as much as it's great to have an athlete that understands what they're doing, you have a whole another set of issues you've got to deal with. So if it's, hey, coach, coach, like, hey, things are going well. Okay. Yeah. Why do I change it? What do you want me to do? Let's do this. Okay. Boom. So very, very coachable athlete with that stuff. So you've started a couple things. You started the BK Foundation and the BK Trackstar app. Make sure I got both of those things correct. The foundation itself, tell us about the foundation, because I know they're both dealing with youth kids and something that, as we were talking about actually before we started recording, how important that youth sport is. So talk about what the foundation is doing.
Well, the foundation is used to fund youth track and field and high school programs, because, of course, the financial support that you receive on that level is not very much. So being a youth athlete and just knowing how expensive it is to travel to those summer track meets, and then being in high school, knowing, you know, the equipment and the uniforms, the track team was, seems like they were always last to get the new uniforms, and everybody has brand new stuff and track is still on, 2-3 year ago uniform. And I always wondered, like, why is this like that? And they told me about the budget. They were like, well, you know, there's no budget. And if it's, you know, money left over for us to get uniforms or batons or hurdles or blocks, then, you know, they do it. But if not, then that's just something that we go without. So I wanted to kind of pretty much provide some relief, because I know with kids and being around them, and even the kids today, they really like, it's the aesthetic. If it looks run down, it looks unorganized, it looks like no one really cares, that's kind of usually the attitude you're going to get from a majority of the kids. Yep. But if they come out and they see new blocks, new hurdles, brand new uniforms, nice bags, and it just looks like they care about the program just as much as they care about the other programs, then it's kind of, it's a little bit it's motivational for them, and it encourages them to want to participate and want to be on the team. So even though that seems like something small, a lot of kids enjoy that, and they like having new things, and they like learning new things. There's some schools who don't even have starting blocks, and to me, that's just unreal that a track team doesn't have starting blocks, but some don't. So I wanted to provide that stuff for them, and I wanted to help. And usually you don't really have to do a lot to qualify for the grant. All you have to do is be, you know, a youth or high school track and field club or program. And if I have the money for it, then usually I give $1,000 scholarship out, but I only give that to five $1,000 scholarships strictly to the track program for them to use in whatever way they need it. But this year I kind of broke it up into $250 so that I can give it to more schools. But I have a partnership with Gil Athletics now that the $250 can kind of go further, you know, instead of being able to get one or two blocks, you can probably get four. So it's still useful. And I reached 11 schools so far this year, so I still have a lot to go. But the foundation is really just, it's for financial support for the coaches to kind of take kind of the stresses off of them of not having nice stuff for their kids.
You know, I think this is an extremely noble cause, and obviously you're giving back to the sport that gave so much to you. And, you know, you're talking a lot about, you know, how we get kids into the sport and how we attract kids initially to the sport. And that's always a thing. It's either, oh, well, you know, like, you're not so good at soccer, maybe you do track, or you're not starting on the basketball team, maybe come high jump. Right. So, I mean, I understand that part of it, but I for the youth and maybe the junior high school kids that are listening out there, how did youth and high school track and field specifically shape you, Bianca Knight, as a person today?
Because it gives you, it's a team sport, but it's also very individual. And the thing that I liked about it the most is you can set what, like, your personal, like, personal best. I love personal best because it's not a world record. It's not the school record. It's not the state record. It's your record. It's you doing better each time you go out there on the track. So the app, that's actually one of the things for that, because I want kids to see their progress against their own progress, not other people's progress. Because sometimes when you see that other kid that's way out ahead of somebody, you think that's where you're supposed to be, and you overlook that, you know, when you kind of already came like a long way, like you're doing well and you should focus on that. And I think if you focus more on that, you could do even better. But if you want to go from here to there with skipping this middle ground, then it's not going to work. And that's, and track is like a life lesson type sport, because everything works that way. You see so many people doing so many things. And obviously most people's initial reaction is like, well, why has it happened for me yet? Why is it? Everything happens at its own pace. It happens differently for everybody. Somebody could come out to the track tomorrow, very first time, and they could be like I was, and they just instant success. And then there's some people who people don't see them until, or notice them until their senior year or freshman year. How it's like, oh my God, this kid came out of nowhere. But then when you go back and you actually look, it's like, well, it kind of wasn't out of nowhere. They have been progressing. We just wasn't paying attention to them because they weren't winning all the time. Yeah. So when they got to a program and they just, you know, got older, the body matured and things like that, and they kind of, you know, set a goal for themselves, did things, then they kind of had a breakout year. They didn't come out of nowhere. They just broke out. And I think that's how life happens as well. Because a lot of people, they say, oh my God, this is so, you know, this is a crazy thing to do an app. And it's like, well, I don't know if it's going to be successful or not, but you have to do it to find out. And it's useful. I know that it's a need for it. Yeah. I know that coaches and athletes can look at this and see something that helps them. It's free. And, you know, it's like, hey, if they think that it's great, then that's fine. I'm not expecting to be Twitter overnight. I was on Twitter when it first started. Twitter was nowhere near like it is now. A lot of people thought that it was the most pointless and useless app they have ever seen in their lives. Like, oh my goodness, people are just talking. You have to text the tweet in. Like, that's how Twitter started. Like, this is ridiculous. And now look at Twitter. Twitter is probably, it's right behind Facebook as one of the number one platforms. It's amazing. People go there for almost everything now. So it takes time. And I understand that because that's how track and field is. So I was able to start a foundation and start an app and start all the things that I'm doing, knowing that it's not going to happen instantly. It's going to take time, but I have to keep working at it. And I see use my small gains to see, kind of give me a picture of what the future could be like. It's like, okay, well, if I started right here and I'm doing this, I think if I keep doing this at this rate, then probably in a year or two, this is going to be a really good thing. Like, but some people and a lot of kids expect to go out to the track and they're the state champion the same year. Some kids, it works, it's that way, but for a lot of kids, it's not. I remember one year, and again, I never coach kids based off of my experiences. I always went to the state meet. I always won. Like, it was never, that was a normal thing to me. I never considered that you had to make it to state. I thought that was a regular track meet that I'm going to. Yep. And one year I saw this relay team who had never been to state before. They finally made it, and oh my God, they were cheering and they were so happy. And that moment was like, man, that is crazy. Like, I never really thought that some people never go to state, and here I am thinking that that's just a normal thing to do. That's a normal track meet. I always expected to go to state. So when I talk to kids, I never speak to them from my perspective. I always do it from those girls who were so excited to make it to state, because it's not always about winning. I'm not even sure what place they got or anything, but they were in the moment. Track is a sport that you have to stay present for. If you start looking back or you start looking too far ahead, you're not going to make it. You have to stay present. What have you done lately sport? Mm-hmm. Take it meet to meet. Okay. If you're not using the last meet to improve and you're using it to critique and you're using it to it's not for anything positive, then it's not going to help you. You have to be mentally prepared. Track is one of those sports that you can literally defeat yourself in a race before you even line up. because you overthinking it. And somebody
said it better.
It's ridiculous. And I never really understood that, but people ask me why I don't listen to fast music before I compete. I was like, well, because I like to keep my heart rate slow. I like to be calm. I like to like show up to the line, not already out of the race, because that can happen if you get too pumped up, too nervous, too anxious. So
What music are you listening to? I got to ask the question.
R&B. Always okay. R&B. I like nice and slow and stuff that can take my mind away from racing.
Makes sense. Yeah, get your mind off it, calm down, relax, suppress the emotions,
because some athletes, and you see them, they'll get out there and they will have the worst race. It's like, oh my god, like I got out and my legs were just dead, I don't understand what happened. It's like, well, mentally, like, you know, where were you, where have you been mentally? And then they may tell, oh my god, like this was just such a nerve-wracking day, like I really didn't, I saw the heat sheets and this guy's PR is this and this PR. Kids do not, I wish they took the times off of the heat sheets, like, you see what they ran, oh my god, I'm never gonna be able to keep up with them. And it's like, that's just a PR, they have not ran close to that yet this season. Like, stop looking at that. And they don't understand, though. But that was the experience people had with me. So that's why I know that they hated racing me. It was like, her again? She's in my heat? I hate that. And it's just like, okay. Like, and
so I what? What gave you the confidence, you know, running at a world-class level? What, when you were on the line or when you were, you know, walking up to the blocks, what gave you the confidence to say, you know, like, I know who I am. I know what I'm about. What gave that to you?
My coach. Coach, track is very scientific, and that's what I love about it. It's just a numbers thing. And if my coach told me I was ready to run a time, and I was ready, and I felt ready, and I execute, then it's going to be okay. Then I would just go out there and focus on that. Like, I always, it didn't matter who I lined up against. It didn't matter what their PR was. If it was something that I hadn't ran before, then I was okay with it. Cause it's like, okay, well, maybe I can run that someday. Like, that's fine. Like, that's not going to discourage me from trying. Like, you had to get there at some point as well. So I welcome competition. I like this. Sometimes I cried. And I did hate to lose. I hate to lose. So that was a motivating thing as well, because I felt like how hard I trained, I didn't expect to lose, because I did not have the same kind of summer as my friends had. I spent all of my summers traveling and running every year. I spent all of my summers at a track running and doing things that most 15 and 16 year olds would be like, are you seriously at a track all day, every day? Like, that is ridiculous. But I enjoyed it. I liked it. I liked traveling, and I liked seeing the results. I like my coach telling me that I would be able to go out and do something, and then I did. So
it was really about execution for you. Like, I'm gonna execute what I know I can do. Yes. Which I think everyone needs to take, and they need to take a chunk of that and put it in their own racing or their own performance.
Yeah, as long as you execute, I think it'll come. Race the clock. Everybody's in their own lane. Another great thing about track, well, except for distance runners, they end up in the same lane. But for the most part, everybody is running their own race. And that is the beauty of the sport. And that's why I think that's why I encourage so many people to just try track and field. Just try it. Like, I know you may, like you said earlier, you may not be the best on the football field. You may not be the best on the basketball court, but please trust me, like, just try track and field. You may be a multi-athlete. And a lot of high school kids don't know about that. It's like, I'm not good in 100. I'm not good in the 2. I'm not good. It's just like, yeah, but you're pretty good in a lot of events, though. And do you know that you can get a scholarship for that? And they don't know that. And I encourage them, like, it's okay, just try to do everything. But they don't allow it. So I'm trying to see if it's a way that high schools can actually add the multis, because there are athletes who don't compete in the summer who need that experience before they get to college. And a college coach tell them that they're a multi-athlete. So, execution was my thing. And now it's just, I like to, you know, help kids see that track is what you make it, is everything that you make it. So
we talked about the foundation a little bit and what you're doing. You've given to 11 schools. You got a partnership with Gill, and Gil always does an incredible job. They love working out with the youth. They love helping the youth. And I'm glad that they've jumped in with this kind of stuff. You mentioned the app itself. We briefly mentioned it, but dive into it just a little bit more with everything, because I've heard you talk about it a little bit. You were talking about, again, before we started recording that stuff, and tell me about it. Like, so what is the app meant to do? Because the one thing you mentioned a couple minutes ago was, oh, the app can take a look at, you know, what your PRs are. And hey, the 200 last week, I was, you know, 25. Now I'm 24.8 and now I'm 24.6. Like, I'm coming down, but this happens. But what does the app do? Is it just for athletes? Is it for coaches? Is it what is the purpose behind that kind of stuff?
It's for athletes and coaches. One common thing that I noticed on a high school level was there weren't a lot of track coaches. Okay. They were basketball and football coaches overseeing the track team.
Yep.
So one complaint that they had is, well, you know, I don't really know what to do with these kids. I have no idea what events they do. I don't know anything about the events. So I was like, okay, how can I help? So I came up with the app as a means to, okay, now these coaches can see their roster of athletes. They can see who's on there and what they compete in. So now you take the guesswork out of, well, I don't know what they do. So now you know what they do. Now you can also look and see how well they're doing what they do, how competitive they are in that event. And maybe if they're in the wrong event, you just really never know unless you actually, you know, look at it. So you can see how they're trending from season to season in their event and how competitive they are in the state, the nation, the world, which, you know, whichever way you want to look at it. And it gives you a better idea. To me, I always say it helps you train more intuitively because you can put workouts in there. And to me, with the experience that I had with my coaches, like I said, he would give me numbers and he would tell me what I was ready to hit by the weekend. And most of the time I did it. He would tell me if we were training through a track meet, or he would tell me if we were training to, like, hey, you know, you're not going to see this week, you're not going to feel good at the track meet. Your times are not going to, we're not working on that. We're not focused on that because we have to be ready for next week. So it's one of those things where I wanted coaches to see what combination of workouts they're putting together that gave them a good track, like, okay, they perform well this week. I like this. This is every sport has benchmark workouts. Like, as a 200 meter runner, there are certain workouts on the track that I would do that let me know I was more than prepared to go out and run sub 22.5. Like, if I can do this in this time, I know that I'm ready. And then put a whole week together. It's like, if this week I can really get through these workouts, I know I'm where I'm supposed to be. So I want coaches to be able to see what a week like that looks like. Mm-hmm. What does we're ready week looks like? Or what does one look like where everybody ran horribly? What did y'all do that week? So if you don't keep track of that stuff, you don't write that stuff down, you don't get the times that they're hitting in it, it's hard for you to be able to kind of pinpoint where you need to move things around. Maybe we did too much on the front end. Maybe we didn't do enough. Maybe it's somewhere in here we can figure out the right combination of things on which days to give my athletes the best advantage on meet day. So that is what the app is for, because that is how you train as a professional. It's about putting the right workouts together at the right time of the week, right month, right cycle, for whatever meet that you have coming up. So we never just go out and it's like, the coach doesn't know what we're doing today. He knows exactly what we're doing today, and he knows why we're doing it today. He knows
more importantly, the why you're doing things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So I want coaches to understand, like, hey, you need to understand why you're doing what you're doing, because the high school season is really, the window is really, really short. So you don't really have the luxury that we have as professionals and collegiate coaches, where we have an indoor and an outdoor season and we can start training in the fall to get ready. Like, you have 2 weeks to get these kids prepared, and then you have a month to get them ready for district, regionals, area championships, and then the state meet. They're all back to back. So they need to be able to run back to back to back to back. And the way that you do that, it's like, hey, they're going to have to train through a couple of meets. Do you know how to do that? So it's to help them learn how to make a successful training plan. So I'm also launching a website called Elite Suite that will have training plans, like very simple workouts.
Say that website again for me.
Elite Suite.
Okay.
called Elite Suite because it's like elite, but they're but the amazing thing about that is I got help from Molly Huddle, I got help from Corey McGee, I got help from Raven Saunders, Brittany Reese, Omar Craddock, who else? It's so many athletes and coaches who are like, oh my God, yes, I would definitely contribute something to that. Because my idea is to give them like tips, give them coaches tips on how to, what's the best thing to do for a long jumper? How do you know if you have a long jumper or a triple jumper? How do you know what kind of jumper you have? How do you know what kind of sprinter you have? Are they a power sprinter? Are they more of like, you know, just got a really good cadence? Like, what kind of sprinter do you have? How do you train for the pole vault? Like, how do you do, what do you, what I got, like things like that. And I got, like I said, I reached out to athletes, and to my surprise, a lot of them were like, oh my God, yes, I love that. Like, I would really love to help the youth athletes come up, and it's free. It's not, again, everything that I do, my big thing is accessibility. I think that track is slowly getting to a point where information, like we said, when DISTAT and things like that were around, it's like this information was just right there, and yep. You could just get it and that was that. And it's not like that anymore. And I'm noticing that the kids are discouraged from competing because they feel like if I don't go to this camp or if I don't go to this clinic, I'm just not going to be good because that's where the good people are going. Mm-hmm. And track is not that kind of sport. I didn't go to special camps. I didn't go to special clinics. If you got it, you got it. Like, don't need a special camp or clinic to know that. You just need a coach and you need a good attitude and you just need to be ready to go train. You don't really need to go to a camp or a clinic. So I kind of wanted to put something together by athletes, by elite athletes, for kids to be able to have as a reference to, okay, well, if this is what Molly Huddle did, then I know that, you know, this is going to be good because she is amazing. If this is what Cora McGee did, she is like, I'm looking at the stuff that they sent me and I'm like, I could not do this. Some of that stuff is some of that stuff is crazy. I'm like, oh my God, like the marathon, I could not imagine. Like I couldn't, the mile, all this stuff. Like I could do the mile or the 2 mile, but when Corey, they're very, distance runners I learned are very particular about their routine. They have a way that they wake up. Mm-hmm. They have certain things that they're going to eat. They have, it's just more particular than I thought it was until I saw their stuff. And this is stuff that I feel like kids need to see and they need to know, like, it's a method. It's a method to being able to be these elite athletes that you aspire to be.
The collaboration, I think, is the best part about that because you put everybody together. You've got collaboration on two fronts. Because again, you're talking about, now let's split this here for a second. You're talking about the collaboration with coaches. And one thing we even talk about in the college game all the time is, hey, coaches, get the hell off your high horse because you're not the greatest coach in the world here. You know, let's worry about, let's collaborate back and forth. Hey, that workout for you, you just did 6x250, you know, 10 minutes or whatever the case might be. Let's take that workout. Did that work for you? Now, we did terrible this weekend. Okay, pull that one out. Work back and forth. So you're right. For youth coaches, this is great because a lot of us, we have our own little circles in college and we sometimes reach outside of those things, but youth, you know, the more you have, not just in your area, but around, is awesome. And then the collaboration for kids. And of course, you got to put a disclaimer on the website. These are pro athletes. Don't just because they can execute a workout with, excuse me, you know, 8x300 with 60 seconds rest, and they're going to run it in 47, 48, doesn't mean that you should be able to do the exact same thing. Like, you have to adjust what you're doing.
But
you
might need 3 minutes. It's great perspective, right? It's great perspective.
100%.
You know, it's amazing perspective for people to say, wow, like, you know, this is what people are doing. This is how serious they take. I think a lot of people just think that there's talented, right? And like you said, you alluded to, when you see someone who's highly successful, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that led up to all of that, right? So also I wanted to know, so how can people get access to the app, get access to the foundation? What's the easiest way? If I'm a youth coach or a parent of a kid that, you know, wants to be the next Bianca Knight, where do I go?
The app is on, it's in the App Store and Google Play. You just go to both app stores, download it. Like I said, it's free. Create a profile. I have instructions and pretty much everything on bktrackstars.com. And my foundation is bkfgives.org. And you can go there and kind of see the work that I've been doing, kind of see who won scholarships in the past, and interviews. I got my Olympic race up there. Just kind of fun facts about me and interesting things and ways that you can be involved and things like that. But yeah, so my app is for parents, fans, athletes, coaches. You can, you know, it has instructions on how to sign up. So.
And you made it for, you made this for free?
I made it. I'm giving it for free.
Giving it for free. No, no, no. You didn't make it for free. I apologize.
So another follow-up to that is, because, you know, we have a lot of people that listen to the podcast, professionals, coaches. Mm-hmm. How can people help you out with the foundation? You know, how can people help you out with the foundation to continue to push your cause and your passion that you've got going on here?
Yeah.
Share it and donate. I've been getting a pretty good amount of donates lately because I'm really pushing the foundation and really talking about it. But again, my foundation is a nonprofit. It's a 501c3, so you can definitely write off anything that you send to it. And it's going directly to schools. Like, it's not for me. It's not for profit. I'm not ever interested in gaining anything from, you know, people in the sense of that. Donating $5, $10 here, to me, it adds up. Like I said, I have a partnership with Gil. So to me, like I said, you may not think it's much, but I think that it's a lot of money for a school who does not have uniforms, mm-hmm, or batons or blocks or things like that. So every little bit counts. Bibs, hip numbers, like it can, trust me, I can use it.
That's the greatest thing. Well, I kind of see the next way you're going. Maybe you've had the idea already, I think, but you could have a BK night, or excuse me, the BK Foundation track meet at night.
I do. I've had two invitationals so far, and I'm working on
it. I apologize. I didn't even know that. Whoops.
Yeah. So that was a qualification to get the grant at first. It's like, hey, if you come to the track meet, you'll be entered in a pool of schools who, mm-hmm, are eligible for it. But the pandemic had, you know, it stopped one of my meet from last year. And this year, I'm working on something. I think I'm going to be able to do one this year in Mississippi. I do everything in Mississippi for the most part because that's where I'm from. So
get back to the home. Yep. Get back to the homeland, man. I tell you what, Bianca, this has been incredible learning about it. I love hearing about it. I love hearing about the, you know, running the flats on the wood track. No questions about that. That was awesome. And at the same time, coming back and the fact that you're giving back in the way you are, knowing that, like, hey, I had it easy. And a lot of these kids don't have it as easy as I did. And a lot of these kids, like, it's as you said, it's a little bit of a wake up for you at some times, that 4x1 you reference, like making state, like, wait a minute, that's a big deal. So I love the fact that you're giving back. I love the fact that you're doing it. I love the fact you go back to Mississippi and put the track meet on and do that stuff. I apologize, I didn't know that. But at the same time, you were doing some absolutely incredible things. We'll definitely put the links in our bio. We'll definitely put the links up when we post the podcast for sure. Get back out there, help Bianca's foundation, get that thing rocking and rolling, because if we don't have youth rolling in the sport of track and field, like in cross country, like, we're not going to have a sport no matter what it was. And it always starts with the kids. So Bianca, thank you. Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. No questions about it. We're looking forward to seeing what you do. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Bianca.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Wow. That one was absolutely special. It was great to have Bianca be so open about, you know, the decisions to leave the University of Texas and why. And it really spoke to the importance of having the correct support system around, and not saying the University of Texas didn't do a good job of that, but saying it just, she realized it was not for her and to, for the betterment of everybody, that, like, look, she's going to head out, and she wanted a support system that was a little different. And for each school, each kid, it's not perfect. Okay. Sometimes those things don't work. So it was incredible to hear her open up about that stuff. Also to open up about the issues she's had, you know, with fame and social media and the challenges from it, from eating disorders, body imaging and weight, what that kind of did to her and how that has impacted her. She's an incredible, incredibly strong, brave woman for speaking out with that stuff. But one thing I absolutely love, though, as well, was her dedication to the youth, her dedication to making the BK Track Stars app available for free in your play, in the App Store, the Google app, the Apple app, whatever the Apple Store is. I don't know what they call that. I don't have an Apple phone. But also the BK Foundation, the fact that she's given out scholarships and has partnered with Gill Athletics to help give out a ton of scholarships so that high schoolers, youth, can all have the proper equipment and something that's exciting. Check her out. Check out, we put the links in her bio. Please go ahead and check that out. Give to the BK Foundation if you would. Every little bit helps, as she said. It's all nonprofit. Nothing's coming to her. She's giving it straight back to the school. So if you can do that, please do. And again, we truly appreciate your time. We appreciate you joining us and pulling a chair up to the table. We could not do this without you. Could not be one of the top running podcasts in the country every single week without you. So again, if you like it, if you found great value in what we're doing, please share this. Please rate us on iTunes. Please put on Spotify and go ahead and download every episode. Share it to your friends, family, and everybody you might be able to. This is something we love to do, but we hopefully we bring great value to it. So until we talk to you again next week, thank you.